As long as you can handle that devastating news.
Yeah. It was you know what? Let's agree to never speak of it again.
All right then.
Okay.
Five. Five. Anyway. Well, I've done some acting there. Acting chops.
Chops of acting.
Yes, like big slabs
wrapped,
of meaty
wrapped
acting.
In bacon.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Right, we're off to a worse start than we were the last time when I wasn't
recording.
No,
we're not. Hit the theme music.
Oh, yeah. Now, as you may recall, that pummels the ears the first couple of times, but what, you know, eight episodes in, what do you reckon?
I'm actually enjoying it. It's not that bad once you really kind of get used to how terrible it is.
Wait till season two.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be great, great, great.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, well, welcome to The Last Word, a Press Gang intro cast with Chris and Illyrio, where I, the Chris, introduce the Illyrio, to Press Gang, the Stephen Moffat OBE kids program about kids making a newspaper for kids. Kids!
Children who aren't children.
Yes. So we got vaguely tweeted at by Calder Holmes, who
played
Zemma.
That's amazing.
Did you see that?
I did.
Like, it's a fairly sort of...
Yeah.
What's the word? Peripherally Doctor Who involved guy called Clayton Hickman who made a joke about Calder Holmes being some kind of a space-time event.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, like, we could just ask her herself because she's on Twitter.
She's on Twitter.
They did that and she had a brief reply with some kind of a panel from a comic that I've never seen featuring a crone, a sort of sorceress or whatever called Calder, which I found funny.
That is funny.
I didn't suggest she listen to the podcast because I suddenly couldn't remember if we'd said anything unpleasant about her. Like, I'd intimated that Sarah was a dull character. But at this point, like, Sarah's meant to be a dull character, so that's not really a problem for me.
No.
But I can't remember if I've said anything unkind about Kelda herself.
I don't think so. I remember that we talked about her continuing to act and doing some kind of local theaters and stuff, and how we thought that was great.
Yep. She is one. She is continued. Not like a Diana Dukes who's disappeared.
Hmm.
I don't. She's actually disappeared.
No, yeah,
I
agreed.
I figured the acting lark wasn't for her.
You mean she fell off the face of the earth?
Yes, that was. It wasn't widely reported.
No.
Girl in death plunge, but like an upwards plunge.
Yes. By the way,
I don't know what that would be. In like an egg gulp.
I want to warn you and our listeners. I'm going to be doing some serious yelling at some point in this episode.
Ooh.
Because during my first watch of this episode, shortly after the last time we recorded, I watched part two, and then I rewatched just recently to take notes properly. And oh boy, did something dawn on me that made me very, very, very angry. But we shall get there when we get there.
I'm fascinated. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely fascinated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not Henderson's, is it?
No.
Okay, we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I rewatched part one. For those who are not on the Facebook group, you'll notice that I picked out some interesting stuff.
Yeah,
like for the fact that Chrissy Stewart's article that they have immediately mentions that the kid's called Michael Elliot and that he's got a sister called Jenny Elliot. You complete morons! You didn't have to go on this.
No, they didn't have to do this
office adventure at all. Yeah. Metal Gear Kerr, or whatever it was they were doing. Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear Solid. I don't know what that was about. It's like, if you guys had just read the article, you would have been fine.
I've learned that Randa is actually called Kate.
Nice.
Is the name of the character. And in the novelization that I am flipping through.
Yes.
That character is not the person who does that. It's Julie and Fraz.
Oh,
but
nice.
I think maybe Julie wasn't about for that episode, so they promoted drama school news team member Kate / Randa.
Randa.
Kate Randa. It's fine. We can use both.
We could.
We don't have to because we don't see her again. I did, in fact, see her briefly in an earlier episode because, shockingly, last week I referred to Jeff, and that's not Jeff. Jeff's a completely different guy. I double checked a night in, and I saw Jeff, and I also saw Rando briefly at a typewriter. But the guy I thought was Jeff is actually called Keith.
Keith,
the character's name, Keith Evans, I think, is played by Horace Oliver. There you go. I've done some digging.
Nice.
I finally found out that the train station that Jeff goes to, South Park train station, is in fact Slough train station.
Nice.
Slough.
Yes, it's not Slough, like, or Slough
or Slough.
It's Slough, which I heard about in The Office.
Good old The Office, yeah. Yes. David Brent.
I can catch a monkey.
Oh God, no! Oh, don't, well, eat it out, obviously, because there's hunger in the world, which I hate. sorry, strange David Brent moment there.
David Brent.
That doesn't happen very often.
No.
So, yeah, I did that thing in the Facebook group. Like, I've done this in many a Facebook group where I have this idea to look up a thing, and then I do it, and I tend to present all of, like, my working as I'm going on.
Yeah.
There was one in the Intro to Briscoe group when I was trying to find out whether, as IMDb claims, the actor John Piper Ferguson was in an episode of The Littlest Hobo.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, he is a Canadian actor, and it was a Canadian series, and he could have been about 14 at the time. And
exactly.
One of the skateboarding kids. And it wasn't. It was an actor called John Ferguson, who is a little person, who was the stunt double for a
child,
a female toddler, who fell into a lake and was rescued by the dog. When the dog rescues the girl, it's this little person chap with a blonde wig on.
That is
the John Ferguson, and that was a little troll that I did, and I was really happy with myself, and no one cared.
Well, I do appreciate those, just so you know.
Thank you.
Because I oftentimes do that myself for different reasons and different purposes, and when you finally find the thing that you're looking for, it is amazing.
Yeah. I got to say, I'm pretty good at it. I used to do that shit as my job.
And I know.
I'd have to do exactly that, but in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then write it up and condense it.
Exactly.
So, yes, IMDb is wrong, you know, because I love that people trust IMDb in a way they don't trust Wikipedia, even though IMDb is also full of user-generated content.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that someone looks at it first and then goes, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
So it takes longer. But beyond that, you may have heard me mention once that I know a guy who writes for children's television.
Yes, yes.
I didn't mention his name. His name is Paul Rose. He's one of many Paul Roses, but if you go to IMDb, you'll find him because I think he's one of the few that is a writer. And on his biography is some complete nonsense that people put on there, like how he once broke both his legs jumping in front of a tractor to save a pig. Someone at IMDb saw that and went, yeah, sounds all right.
Sounds all right.
And it's still there to this day. I also remember that IMDb listed the three leads of the Blair Witch Project as deceased initially.
Yeah, well, that kind of makes sense.
And that they thought Lisa Kudrow was in a film called Tangents or Time Chasers because of one comment in an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh my gosh, that's less one extra.
They went, oh, it's Lisa Kudrow. And so someone went, Lisa Kudrow, like, you know, girl at the mall or whatever.
Mall
and
girl.
It was there. It was there for ages. Crazy stuff. Sorry about the press gang here. Briefly mention, Stephen Moffat, OBE. Now the Order of the British Empire. I don't know what that lets him do. Probably just be disappointed.
Free parking?
Yeah. Your voice just went fizzy there. I don't know why.
Free parking?
Yeah, that's good.
Ah.
I'll make a shit joke now. If he also becomes an Earl and an OBE, he could be an earlobe.
Nice.
Not my joke. Ages old.
That's
never mind.
Great. See, we have the Order of Canada here.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
The OC.
Yes. Well, please don't call
California,
it that.
California.
Don't, please don't call it that.
sorry. I wanted to do my
it's an Arrested Development joke.
Absolutely. I wanted to do my alternative rock voice.
Oh, I see. Yeah, Order of Canada. We have some people in it, and one person had it withdrawn.
Oh.
Yes, Conrad Black.
Oh, Captain Black. I've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's in the House of Lords.
Yes, he sure is. Lord Black.
Lord Black. You, and you'd figure some poor guy with that name would be like, you know, characterized as a villain, and it would be unfair. Not unfair.
Nice. I remember it was a program about medical shows like ER, and one of their medical advisors was Dr. Julian Strange.
Nice!
Yeah. You go, I've got to become Dr. Strange.
I must fulfill my destiny.
Christ. Right. How to Make a Killing Part 2, I'll tell you.
Part 2.
Right. In the old back of the DVD, shall I tell you, it says the following. And, you know, I've occasionally posted stuff from the TV listings of the time. I found them in a place.
Yeah.
These little write-ups on the back of the DVD are essentially those.
Okay.
This one has an edit to it. On the original TV listing, it says Kenny continues to pursue the story. Or is it the girl he's pursuing? But since it says exactly that in the previous one, they just change it to, pardon me as I belch.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that going on. Again, sorry, just human digestive systems and things. Also, I covered the microphone that I'm talking to you into, even though I'm recording myself with a completely different microphone.
I understand.
Well done, me. Right, anyway. So they edit it to, Kenny continues to pursue the story, and the girl. With his absence from the paper, Linda has to find another assistant editor. But does it have to be Spike? Once Kenny figures out the mystery, the Junior Gazette starts its biggest ever campaign, undercover work included. And Colin, he tries once again to extricate himself from yet another disastrous scheme. Oh, that Colin! Ha ha ha! Sorry.
Agreed.
Well, they're making up for a lack of Colin last week, aren't
they? True.
By having Ultra Colin!
I know, right?
Not quite in the bunny suit, but certainly like in his element.
Totally. As it were. Elemental Colin.
I'm sorry, a weird little laugh from me there. And so I'm ready to time you doing the whole episode in about 60 seconds to the best of your ability.
Yep.
Perhaps we do need to... I don't know if there needs to be motivation. We get our own sort of chump equivalent.
No, we're fine.
Oh, all right then. We'll just be casual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cash. Totally cash.
This is exactly the England meets Canada podcast, isn't it? It's like, it is. Whatever.
Meh.
Fuck it.
Would you like these furs?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Awesome.
Right. Are you ready?
I think so.
Good, because you're going in 3, 2, 1, go.
Kenny's missing. And he didn't bother to tell anybody what the actual solution was. That was from last time, as exposed to us by Linda and Spike, quite comprehensively. Kenny has the worst first date ever. Or was it their second date? Jenny basically tells him, you're being obtuse. He didn't really notice what I was trying to get noticed. Get back to work. He figures out that what she really wanted him to notice is that there are people selling solvents to minors. What happens next? The press gang sting operation. And you have Fraz with a phony sores on his face. Danny does some time scheduling math. And you have Tids is there. Purple is not a star sign. And although the police can't officially endorse any of what the Gazette is doing, they have busted so many of these creepo creepers / immigrants that are selling solvents to children. And Colin is stuck in a pile of prams. That would be a stroller pile, for those of you interested.
Until you said that would be a stroller pile, you were bang on 1 minute.
Oh, nice! Went a little bit over. That's all right. That's all right. I'll totally take it.
Have a Canadian celebration.
Hey, did you hear they're bringing back Clearly Canadian?
I don't know what that is.
It's a clear soft drink with kind of fruity flavors.
Oh, I did know what that was. Yeah, sorry. Well, I'm sure we used to have that. I used to have the peach one that after about half a glass, this sort of weird gummy stuff starts building up in your mouth.
Yes, which is why that stuff is just the grossest. I don't know why people think with nostalgia instead of actual memories.
Yeah, that is how I remember it. It's like two. It's like, oh, this is refreshing, and then it's like, ugh,
yeah,
clag.
Yeah.
Okay. All right then. Episode proper. You ready?
I'm so ready.
All right, your body is ready.
I was born ready.
Yeah, but are you ready now?
Yes.
Cool. How to Make a Killing Part 2. Yep. The music ends and we are black screen. How to Make a Killing part two. We mean business.
Totally. Fantastic. Let's get right to it.
Lon McGorry. Monday, 6th of March, 1989, this was on. I thought, I'm going to do something a bit different. I'm going to do a kind of on this day.
Oh, nice.
And I couldn't find any sort of big events. And, like, there was a female Polish tennis player born, but I don't know her name. And I haven't written it down. I'm not going, oh, it's a foreign name. I'm not going to bother pronouncing it. I just didn't make a note of it. And it was the death date of an actor called Harry Andrews, who I had a brief look, and I recognised some of the stuff he was in, but I don't really know him. So I dropped the on-the-day idea. This was, like, yesterday morning when I was researching that.
Yeah.
Yesterday afternoon, Joe of Joe and Chris Do a Thing came round, and the thing we decided to do was go and visit my mate Holly up near Edgware, and we watched a film that I downloaded a while ago, a 1978 telekinetic psycho-thriller thing starring Richard Burton called The Medusa Touch, which is long, a bit too long, but great. And having a look through the fucking cast on IMDb, Harry Andrews.
No way!
Same dude, Monday, 6th of March, 1989.
Wow.
And that was a film that was full of crazy coincidence. It was full of stuff I've been having conversations with. Derek Jacobi was in it, who I'd just been talking about on the drive over. Like, the notion of authors being able to write objectionable characters without sharing that character's beliefs themselves was covered in the film. It was crazy. It was just full of that kind of thing. And this dude I hadn't heard of until that morning being in this film was just one of those things
that's pretty
that
awesome.
Makes people believe in spooky nonsense.
Yep. Including my accountant.
Ooh.
Who's writing a book about all this.
Oh.
Because he's convinced he's a medium.
Right.
Yep.
I see. Oh, right. Okay. Your actual accountant is convinced he's a medium and is writing a book about being so.
Yep.
Sorry, it genuinely sounded like the setup to a kind of elaborate punchline.
I wish it were.
Turns out it's just your life.
It's just ancillary characters in the good old Illyrio story are a little bit kooky sometimes.
Fair enough.
He's a wonderful human who does a very good job.
Fair enough. But also, woo-hoo!
I would say.
Fair enough. Right. After the black screen, Lorne McGorry's credit shows up over Kenny ringing the bell at a house so huge I thought I was watching an American horror movie.
I know, right?
Every fucker in those films lives in a house that could house 64 people.
Yeah.
Don't know why. Probably because it gives you lots of, you know, corners for spooky things to hide behind.
Yeah, lots of turning around and hiding in the hallways. You need a hallway to stalk someone through, right?
Exactly.
And if you don't really have a hallway, like the apartment I grew up in, we didn't have a hallway.
You couldn't, yeah, I was thinking you couldn't do a horror in the flat where I live because if you stand in the right place, if you turn your camera 40 degrees, maybe 35, you could see the entire place.
Exactly.
Every room.
Every single bit of it. Yeah, agreed.
Crazy. So anyway, Kenny has arrived 10 minutes and 2 days early for his date with Jenny. Which is a bit like the opening line of Nothing Compares to You.
Yeah.
But Kenny is not fucking about. He's instantly like, look, I know about your brother. Now I need to know why nobody talks about it, why you draw on pavements. My phone went ba-ding, which means someone's talking to me on Facebook. Don't know who that is, and I'm not going to look now, because I'm talking to you.
All right.
Oh, yeah. You're important to me. So, as Kenny, it's not the most romantic opening line.
No.
It doesn't sit well with Jenny, but never mind. But, they have a tense moment. He reveals a copy of the Junior Gazette, and thus the reason for his interest. And they go on a furious walk so as to talk more privately. You okay over there?
Yep.
Fair enough. Let me know when you're back.
I'm here. I just had to reach over and grab something. But I'm
cool.
I have you in my ears and I'm following along attentively.
Beautiful. Well, back at the newsroom, which are the words I feel I'm going to say more than any other phrase during the run of this podcast.
Agreed. I know. It's true. It's funny. We should just totally have a code.
BATN.
No. BATNR.
I mean, back at the newsroom, like you don't actually save much time.
No, you don't.
It's like saying WWW instead of World Wide Web. It takes longer to say the abbreviation, you idiots.
Agreed. Which is why people usually say WW.
Oh.
Even though they don't realize that they've only used two W's. Regardless.
I've said triple W. Stephen Fry he went through a sort of woo-woo-woo phrase when he was saying them.
And now you could just drop it.
Yeah, frankly, no one cares.
Nope.
But anyway, back at the newsroom, Franz has finally realized after 6 months of doing the astrology column that purple isn't actually a star sign. Which, the actual important part of this, I think, is the timestamp that the paper's been in business for 6 months at this point.
Agreed.
Kenny's been absent from work for a couple of days. Linda asks Spike if he's sent any word. He sent two words.
The second one was off.
Hooray.
And I was like, wait a second, really? On a kid's show, guys? I guess the first word could have been bugger.
Yeah, well, sod.
Sod.
Shove.
Yeah.
You know, or
it could be anything, really.
Milks off. It could have been just completely unrelated.
Yeah.
But there you go. No, but this and the swear box, remember, is Moffat's way of you know, saying it's clear teenagers do swear. We just haven't ever caught them doing it on the program.
Agreed.
So while Julie asks Danny how many Fs there are in Photograph, which is a joke I don't like, because she's stupid.
Yeah.
Never mind. Colin gets a phone call from Henry.
Henry
is a man that Colin hasn't seen since they set up that deal for the 14 second-hand prams.
Second-hand prams.
Pram, as a word, is this a transatlantic translation problem?
Most likely. We don't use it here, but I know of it because of my exposure to British culture.
Like, even if you don't know that's a baby carriage, like, you'll get the idea as the episode goes along.
Agreed.
And, yeah, there are some pushchairs later as well. Or strollers, if you prefer. Pram. Do you know where we get a word like pram?
Is it French?
No, it's from perambulator. So it probably is French, actually. But,
perambulator, huh?
Yeah, I don't know the source of the word perambulate.
Hmm.
So, but, yeah, I don't know if we'd... I'm just trying to think of the French connection for pram now. But,
I think it has to do with drug deals.
I see. But anyway, yeah, in the Victorian age, they were perambulators because in the Victorian times, people liked giving really long, complicated names to things.
Yes,
to
make they them did.
Sound, to make them sound big and important. And it just got brought down to pram. And there you go. So pram, baby carriage. There you go. Right. Anyway, there's been some issues with these prams.
No, really?
Yeah.
Colin!
There's a suggestion that, like, a baby either just sort of broke one or maybe went straight through it. It must have been a very heavy baby. And he hasn't delivered the brakes yet, so when someone makes a mistake of leaving one of these prams on a hill, they end up chasing it down. Which, even by Colin's standards, this is pretty bad.
That's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, we didn't have a lot of Colin last week. In fact, almost nothing. But you're going to make up for that by making him a horrible human?
Yeah, well, it's weird. He's kind of not a nice guy, but he's a strange character.
Yeah.
He exists slightly outside the reality of the series. Anyway, during this, Linda's trying to collar Sarah to act as assistant editor in Kenny's absence. But normally subservient Sarah, she snowed under with schoolwork and newspaper work. She simply can't do it.
Can't do it.
Though Linda turns her attention to Spike. And Spike delivers what I'm now beginning to think of as when Moffat is writing particular sort of, hey, everyone, look at me lines for Spike. I think he's channeling Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Yeah.
It's clear that Moffat knows Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He's on a Doctor Who documentary talking about one of Douglas Adams's Doctor Who, City of Death, in fact, which is great.
It's fantastic.
And there are lines that I just think he writes Spike as Zaphod. He's like, now she makes me temporary acting assistant editor. Is that a come on or what?
Mm-hmm.
It's a deliberately bad voice on this occasion. I'm sticking with that excuse. It's just still not quite the voice he does. But yeah, I'm going to start calling those Zaphod lines. I hope that's all right with you.
That's perfectly great. I mean, Zaphod's just this guy, you know?
He is just this guy, you know, according to his private brain care
specialist.
Gag Halfrant. Yes. Played by Stephen Moore or Jason, what's his face? Schwartzman.
Yeah, I want everyone to know that. Remember that quiz game that you could play?
Quiz Up.
Yeah, simultaneously or delayed. And you and I actually played some Hitchhiker's Guide trivia simultaneously.
Mm. Yeah.
And we played, I believe, 4 rounds and tied.
Fantastic.
It was quite ridiculous how the two of us got every single question correct across 4 turns.
And that's because there wasn't a question about what happened to Arthur Dent's brother, because I'd have won that, I reckon.
All right. go.
What happened to Arthur Dent's brother?
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer alive. How did he die?
The earth exploded?
Nope, he was nibbled to death by an okapi.
I don't know why I can't even remember that, even if you said it. I'm disappointed in myself.
Nah, it's from the radio series.
Yeah, I've heard the radio series.
Oh, there you go. It's one of those things. Mm. Anyway, I think let's get back to press gang.
Sure, if we must.
You're still great at Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trivia.
Oh, no, I know, I understand. I agree. It's just that this Zaphod reference makes me happy, is what I think I'm trying to get at in a very slow way.
Yeah. Anyway, Spike's happy to be asked, but to knock the wind out of his sails, Linda tells him she tried everyone she liked first.
Mm-hmm.
Spike sees the positive in this, because he takes it to mean that out of everyone she doesn't like, at least he's her favourite.
Or it could be he was the last person there.
Indeed. No, he loves turning he loves turning a positive, Spike. I mean,
yeah,
that's good.
He does, indeed.
Tiddler approaches. Another little disagreement, children. Splendid timing. Spike says no, Linda says yes at the same time.
Exact same time. I'm going to be mentioning Tids a little later.
Oh, I see. I'm glad you said Tids.
Yes.
And Tiddler says that's a good answer and then leaves immediately.
She's smart, that one.
Mm. There's lots of flirting while Linda shows Spike the acting editor work area, but it's not important. It's just an excuse to get them in the same place as Kenny's notes, so that Linda and Spike can explain the previous episode for anyone that missed it, which is nice.
It is actually very nice, but it was a little bit kind of, really, guys? You're going to go through the entire thing? Okay, that's fine.
It feels redundant because we did see it, but, yeah. You know, it's helpful for just casual viewers.
Very.
So there you go. During this part, Linda does say, if you've got no answers, you make the questions bigger, which to me proves Damon Lindelof has seen this episode.
Yep.
Danny approaches, having been given all the lines he was denied in the previous episode. And he's like, he's got on the 420 train, next stop Macton, and Jenny Elliott. Oh, it's a terrible performance. Yeah. I'm sorry, Charlie Creed Miles. I don't know what was going on at this point, but whether it was the directors or whatever, but like, god damn it. But never mind.
There's lots of blinking in his acting. Hmm. There's lots of bouncing up and down in his acting.
Yeah.
There's kind of like pigeon neck going on.
It's a strange one. I feel bad. I do feel bad, like, picking on people. Because
I understand.
It's like, what can you do?
But it's, listen, here's the thing.
Yeah.
They were young people acting. Yes. And some of them maybe were directed in a way that was counter to what they really wanted to do. And as you said, if he's being directed to do it in a certain way and it's not natural for him, then it's going to make the performance maybe seem a little labored. That's the impression I get. It's a labored performance to maybe satisfy someone else's expectation.
That seems good. That's us being English and Canadian again, isn't
yes.
it? Not just yeah,
I'm not going to call someone a shitty actor.
Well, you never know. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
But anyway, Danny must have some kind of local spy network set up.
Yeah.
Because he's had a report of Kenny being seen at the train station. What time he was there.
Yep.
By which he deduces that Kenny has gone to see Jenny Elliott.
Yeah.
We come back to...
He's yes. doing railroad math, right?
He is. Yeah. Like in that Monty Python sketch about people always like solving murders based on what time trains are going to places.
Yes.
Because that was a big thing back in the day.
Absolutely, it was.
We better get back to Kenny and Jenny and find their walk progressing at a furious pace.
They're literally walking faster than senior citizens walking in a mall at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, a literally furious pace because Jenny is fucking furious. Anyway. Jenny wistfully remembers the days when Kenny was just a sweet guy who took the wrong school bag rather than junior reporter who was only interested in her for a dead brother. If that's what you're into, I can set you up with a girl with two bereavements. Sort of a double date.
Ooh.
Kenny has had enough of Jenny's supernaturally fast wit. to know if they can actually talk.
Yeah.
So they do. She's amazed Kenny even knows the story because their super wealthy father, Mr. Elliot, has used his apparently considerable leverage to get the story squashed in every paper that showed the slightest interest. Does that work for you?
It is where now I am going to ask you to give me the floor so I can get very, very, very angry.
All right.
So with Jenny revealing that her father's wealth was used to kill this story, as soon as the episode was wrapping up, it dawned on me. Why are we talking about Chrissy Stewart taking hush money?
I don't think now this is
or
the thing.
Kerr taking hush money.
I don't think that's the case. I think he probably knows someone on the board of directors of the thing and just sort of had a polite word. It's like, you know, I'd rather not be embarrassed by the news of my junkie son leaping off a tower block, actually.
I don't know.
Would you mind?
Because Chrissy Stewart taking hush money kind of fits into her immediate forgetting all her notes about that particular story.
Well, you know, and maybe she upset. Is embarrassed about it now. This is interesting because I never thought about it that way. I just thought about it, Mr. Elliot having this sort of network of old boys.
Yeah.
That he can perhaps but he can, at some like, point some
something trickled
someone.
down, and I assumed it was cash, right?
Maybe
she was intimidated into stopping.
Yeah, my version is just that A, remember Matt Kerr wasn't there at the time. This is 2 years ago.
This is true.
So that's him completely exonerated. He's out of the picture.
Yeah.
Chrissy Stewart, I'm going to go with a former editor leaning on her going, no, we're just dropping that story. There's no public interest. Sorry. We're not following it up. I'm not having...
Although forgetting her notes, I think someone must have told her a little bit more than just there's no interest.
It may have been
a forget this story.
Yeah.
And if anybody ever asks you, forget it even harder.
Yeah, if a kid or a crazy wild-eyed scientist ever asks you about this story.
Indeed. All right. Thank you, Chris, for indulging me.
No, it's all right. I think Chrissy Stewart is... You know, I mean, she did drop the story, but like, I guess it was that or the job, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm fine with that explanation.
I don't feel she financially benefited from it.
Okay. Maybe I just really wanted to say hush money a bunch of times.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Mission accomplished!
Don't you mean hush money? Which is a very expensive hush puppies.
Mm-hmm.
They're made of money.
Money puppies.
They cost more than the amount of money in them, obviously, because of manufacturing costs.
Of course, and distribution and marketing and
fixed costs. In fact, now I say that would be completely logical.
Yep.
You know, if you ordered a £5 note via mail order, it's more likely to cost more than £5.
True.
What a stupid fucking conversation. Right, anyway, she's amazed that Kenny even knows this story because it was completely squashed.
Yeah.
You know, he explains that he figured it out. And the old guy used the lift after Michael reported a strong smell. Kenny realised it's likely to be some kind of solvent-based product, like a cleaner might use, for instance, for getting rid of graffiti, because that was the only solvent-based thing that I encountered when I was a cleaner.
Yeah.
The graffiti people had the smelly things. But yeah, he figures Michael went to the roof for a bit of peace and passing out. By the time he got there, the kind of story that infuriated Bill Hicks was high enough to think he could fly. And now every time I got Bill Hicks in my head going, why didn't he take off from the ground first? Stop ruining it for the rest of us. We lost a moron. Boo-hoo. But there you go.
Oh, Bill Hicks. He's right, you know. But
yeah, I don't entirely... hold with everything Bill Hicks ever said.
No.
And I don't feel he's unquestionable in some in the way that some people do. But I do see the point of that one.
Agreed.
Although his one was about acid and not about solvent abuse.
Yeah.
There you go. You were saying.
I was saying this is where I can't believe the joke. You know, the ground must have come as a big surprise.
Yeah,
and well, I immediately flashed back to a whale in a bowl of petunias.
Oh yes, nice.
And
I wonder if it'll be friendly. With me. Yeah. Needs a big, wide, round sound. Well, if people aren't familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they're going to be well lost.
Yeah, you know what, guys? Go listen to it.
Yeah, or read it or watch it in TV series or movie form.
Yeah, I recently rewatched the movie. The first time I watched it, I was kind of disappointed. Mm. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. It's an adaptation of something that was adapted from something that was adapted.
Yeah, it's a short version. It's had some, studio mandated stuff added to it to pump it up, like the point of view gun. But that's still Douglas's concept.
Yeah.
There are some lines in it I don't like, fair enough, but there are lines throughout the whole thing I don't think are funny.
Yeah.
And many, many more that I do. It's just one of those things. I quite like it.
Guess I was expecting cricket robots.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, well.
Maybe one day. That won't happen.
No.
Anyway, I think Jenny's had enough of Kenny. She sets him home, which sets him off again. Kenny has been like a meek sod all for weeks, and now he's really fucking just letting rip.
You noticed the wrong thing, Kenny.
Yeah, like he can't figure her out. She spent 2 years drawing the chalk outline trying to be noticed. When someone does, she shuts it down. The reason, she tells him, is that he noticed the wrong thing, then she just storms right off. I mean, she could at this point have just told him what the thing was he was meant to have noticed and saved a fair bit of time, which she doesn't.
Which proves to me that Damon Lindelof
has seen this episode. Yeah, that's exactly in my notes right here. You're beginning to understand my style.
Yep.
Back at the newsroom, and Danny reports the findings of his spy network to Linda, deducing that Kenny spent about 90 minutes in Macton, not long enough for a date.
Hey now, Linda. Whoa, really? Hey now.
You're an all-star. But anyway, not long enough for like a long romantic date.
I suppose.
I don't think she thinks he's up there for a bit of the other, as they'd say. Raising the eyebrows there in a kind of a, wink-wink end-of-the-pier type of thing. Yeah. I'm sounding like an old one.
A nudge is as good as a wink for a blind bat.
Splendid. Linda, I'm going to have to make sure that completely coincides on the recording. Well, yeah. So Linda surmises he's been out working on the story by himself in the field.
In the field.
During this time, Linda's been pulling endless reams of paper out of a file and taking over to Spike to let him know they're all wrongly filed. There you go. And then finally, after 6 months, Fraz finally thinks to look through an astrology textbook to get all the correct star signs. And Tiddler checks them off one at a time. Virgo? Check. Scorpio? Check. Kenny?
Nope.
Don't think we got that one. But Fraz, of course, refers to the returning prodigal assistant editor himself, Mr. Double Denim, Kenny Phillips.
Yay! Who immediately just books it right to Billy's desk.
Without asking,
removes Billy's headset.
Yeah.
What a dick move.
You're a bit dickish, that's true.
A bit? He's a tetraplegic.
Yes. Oh, man. They haven't made that clear enough yet, I don't think.
Not at all.
Anyway, no, well then, again, if you hadn't seen either of the previous episodes, they haven't, so who knows.
True.
But anyway, yeah, Kenny clearly didn't feel bad enough about himself already, so he heads to Billy. Billy wonders if he tried everyone who could walk away first. So yeah, they discuss Kenny's rattish behaviour about Jenny Ellis and the High Point Flats. Kenny clearly wants to hear more about why he's a prick.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Linda and Spike have a discussion about their different approaches to management because he failed to use a thermometer to accurately check if a news team member was sick before letting her go home.
Wow.
You didn't tell me I could do physicals. Anyway, Sarah butts in to let him know Kenny's back, but she wasn't able to get surreptitiously close enough to hear what he and Billy are talking about. At which point, Linda's inordinately annoyed at the news they have nobody on staff who can lip read.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a paper, you clearly need someone who can do lip reading.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
It's right there in the journalistic checklist.
Yep.
So anyway, Linda tries to approach them subtly, but is waylaid by discovering Colin hiding under a desk. Not in a bunny suit this time, but in a Hawaiian shirt.
Hawaiian shirt. He wants everyone to know that he's now in Canada.
Yep. Well, specifically a man with a pram wheel.
Yep.
Did you get any joy at a mention of Canada randomly?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
Go, I've heard of that.
I've heard of that place.
Nice. However, it turns out Kenny's idea of having, you know, approaching someone who thought he was a knob in Billy is quite sensible. Because, like, the only people who've thought Kenny was doing bad stuff with this are Jenny and Billy.
Yeah.
Like, they're the only people who think Kenny's been an enormous bellend.
Yeah.
So maybe Billy will be able to deduce where he's gone wrong, you know, what the right thing to notice is.
Exactly.
Billy figures there's been a poor response to any attention shown to Jenny or to Michael Elliott, mm-hmm. so it can't be those things. But the chalk figure was pointing, and it was pointing to a shop. So is it the shop where he bought the solvents? Billy points out you can't, you know, they can't
it's illegal to sell to minors. That to minors. Yeah.
So the dead finger points accusingly at the murderer, Peter Smarkett. That's a pronunciation I've just chosen to use now.
Perfect.
Dear oh dear.
And so it's laid out in front of Kenny. It's spelled out for him. He now has no choice but to connect the dots.
Yeah. There's a weird moment where Billy's telling this story about Christine Adams.
Christine Adams. So Billy and Kenny basically start creeping out.
Yeah.
They turn into little creepers.
He's saying, oh, can I see a picture of Jenny?
No, it was weird. It was like, oh, thanks, Billy. And he's like, I'll settle. Do you have any pictures of Jenny? I'm like, whoa. I'll settle for payments. The one you've got. What do you mean, settle? What is this?
He just wanted to
pictures of a girl as currency?
No, he just wanted to see what she looked
all
like.
All right, I don't know. It because felt really more creepy than that to me.
I understand that. But then Billy just wanted to declare her to be seriously female.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah.
It sent him on his reminiscence about Christine Adams, the girl in the class he was fond of prior to his accident.
Yes.
And his scheme he came up with so he wouldn't feel embarrassed about approaching her. He'd write a note that said, "Dear Christine, this is a note from the guy you fancy most," and hide it in her desk. And then observe her to see who she looked at after reading the note, thus finding out if it was worth asking her out with a reduced fear of rejection. Actually quite sensible.
Quite sensible.
But sadly ended up going on a painful double date with a bike and a bus before trying it out. So,
and he manages to make Kenny feel uncomfortable once again.
Yeah, I this is odd from Kenny because obviously he's a, you know, a nice enough chap, mm-hmm. not necessarily an internet nice guy.
No,
if you know what I mean. Uh-huh. / Xander Harris. But the guy's a prick. He just gets more dark as the series goes on. Xander,
I've heard
he has nice moments, but generally he's surprisingly awful.
Yep.
But yeah, he's immediately, oh Lord, gotta go. And Billy has the rare moment of, like, saving his blushes by going, look, yep, you need to be going now because the shop will be closing soon. You know, he'd have clocked that reaction. But I think he perhaps thinks Kenny already feels bad enough about himself. He doesn't want to plow any more on.
Mm.
Anyway, Spike, having seen Kenny's back, has been clearing his stuff away from the desk. The luster of being Linda's second in command having long since worn off. But no such luck because Kenny's immediately back out of the door. Linda heads out to intercept him. But she finally meets the man with the pram wheel who'd like to speak to Colin Matthews and the queue of parents and crying children behind him.
Yep, Colin's in big trouble.
And a weird, wacky musical sting with a sort of pitch bend bell thing.
Yep.
So yeah, we're back. We're back on the Uxbridge Road and Peter's Market. And I'm convinced in the establishing shot you can see the shocked-faced claret polo shirt and jeans guy from last week.
Yeah.
Like shifting some stock outside. It's very, very minor. It's someone in a claret shirt and some jeans. I'll try and find out where that is. This is not necessary.
It's fine.
Except I think I've actually just gone straight to it. I have. 11 minutes. Yeah. 11 minutes dead on. 11 minutes four. But anyway, it's not necessary. I think it's him. Doesn't matter if it isn't. Frankly, I think they filmed that at the same time they filmed episode
one. That would make
sense. Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? So we cut to inside the shop and Kenny blunders in, arousing the attention of who I assume is Peter. Peter Smarkett, sitting behind his stack of TDK cassettes.
TDK, baby! Oh, man, that brought me back.
It does. Do you have anything like these kind of junk shops full of rubbish cheap electricals and things like that?
Yeah, we do.
Absolutely. I love that these things still exist now. I'd know exactly where to find one. A place where there's no sense to any of the stocking.
There's one 2 blocks from my house. 3 blocks from my
house.
Nice. Yeah.
Just shelves full of whatever
and
they can put
on there. And we have one a few blocks in the other direction on the main strip.
Mm. But it's fucking crazy stuff. You cannot walk around them without knocking
stuff over.
So yeah, behind a stack of TDK cassettes, some Ds and some ADs. Nice. Peter returns to reading a tabloid newspaper, most likely The Sun. We were talking about their headlines last week. The headline on the page he's looking at is Fatima Fury, which, because I know Sun News headlines, is probably a story about sportswoman Fatima Whitbread being annoyed about something. He then turns the page to another headline. We can't really see that very well yet, but we are going to see it later, and I will offer more on that later. Kenny blunders about. He walks down one aisle.
It's as if he's shopping for condoms.
Yes, exactly. The very much like the Mates condoms commercial with Gina McKeon from back in the day here. Great stuff. that's a very specific reference, Chris. Well done. Especially to know the name of the actress in the thing. Oh, God, it's a woman. Oh, no. And then she does a loud price check on Mates condoms at the end after he's been, you know, after the guy's been lucky enough to buy them, which is funny, but is the exact opposite of the intention they want. He's like, did you get a price on these Mates condoms? I went Irish there. She's not Irish. I don't know what that was about.
That's fine.
Never mind. So, yeah, so he's goes around the back of the shop and he starts coming up another aisle in the direction of Peter. Peter glances up. Yeah. Kenny sees Peter looking at him, nervously grabs the first item he can and looks at it intensely. It's citrus-scented super fresh toilet freshener from Sentinel. That's Sentinel with a C after the S. You know, Sentinel. Very good. Fascinating box. And yeah, I recall back in the day buying items of that nature, but like, oh God, what's in this toothpaste? Like, before you can approach.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, throughout this entire scene, the composers think they're scoring a spaghetti western on a late 80s digital workstation. Terrifying. Kenny finally gets the nerve up to approach Peter, and before we continue, I have got to call attention to the headline he's reading on our kids' program.
Now it's upside down.
It is upside down. I've got a picture of it, not upside down here.
Can't really tell what it says from this angle.
Right. Well, the actual words are, and this may be reliant on British slang and things like that, file a fax wife's £27,000 in 8 months on game.
All right. Please explain.
Don't know what the file a fax wife bit is about. Whether it's the wife of someone who worked for the, you know, the actual file of fax company, don't know. But on game is it's it's a story about someone making money as an escort.
Oh, that game.
To be on the game is prostitution. Now, no one says prostitution is the game, but if someone is on the game, they are an escort or call girl.
I understand.
Or whatever. So in your kids' program, you've got a thing about a woman making $27,000 providing sexual services over a space of 8 months.
I understand.
The sub-headline underneath is sexy extras paid bills.
Well, you gotta pay the bills.
You have. Especially if you're Lippy Ian, who received a £1,000 bill for something in a little story underneath.
No.
Up above the Payless DIY commercial. I could not find out anything about this story at all, as you could imagine. Anyway, back to the tale.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny awkwardly asked to buy solvent-based glue on the recommendation of a friend
who used to come here.
And it's here that his twitchy awkwardness and hesitancy pay off, as far as I'm concerned. I think if he had been uber confident, it wouldn't have worked so well. Peter simply says, no problem. Reaches beneath the desk and grabs a 250ml bottle of EvoStick contact adhesive, which he, with a very clear wink, puts on the top and charges £2.50, which is 1p per milliliter.
Oh.
That's good. On this occasion, like with the Trivial Pursuits thing, where we weren't sure, this has the very obvious intention of hiding the manufacturer of the glue.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, there are many other brands. It's not, I'm not saying this kid huffed EvoStick contact adhesive and then died. You know, it's just one of those things. They've attempted to hide it. Not very effective because no other glue looked like that.
Yeah.
It's very clearly EvoStick contact adhesive. Yeah. I knew exactly what it was. You can still get the same stuff. They've got a lot of solvent-free versions now, but you can still get the solvent-based one.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll pay, nowadays, very close to at least double that amount.
Hmm.
That's inflation for ya.
Wow.
Yeah, Kenny takes his prize home, and he phones the Elliot house. He speaks to Jenny's mum, who, over the phone, sounds a lot like her daughter.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah. But she's happy to relay a series of insults about Kenny that she's heard.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's noticed the right thing now. He doesn't know what he's going to do about it, but he noticed it. Now, in a normal situation, it'd be an awkward thing to tell somebody's mother because they're going to fire a bunch of questions, either at you or at the person you're leaving the message for. But luckily, on this occasion, doesn't matter because the reason Mrs. Elliot sounds so much like Jenny over the phone is that it is Jenny.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which begs the question, why was she taking a message?
Exactly what I have here. Why was Jenny holding a pen on a pad?
Must tell Jenny that, oh, I know. Must tell Jenny I am her.
Mm-hmm.
Very confusing.
Yeah.
Perhaps there are further problems. Perhaps she actually does think she's at her own mother.
Ooh.
In a sort of Norman Bates style.
Oh, maybe. Wait, spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert for 1960s Psycho and the earlier book by Robert Bloch and Bates Motel. Sorry, everyone.
And then we see the old call each other at the same time gag.
Oh, yes. Get both either busy signals or what we call them here, engaged tones.
Engaged tones. When's the date?
Indeed.
So here's the thing. Every once in a while, my wife and I will actually try to reach each other at the same time. And because they're cell phones that we have, mobile phones, we don't get a busy tone, but it goes straight to voicemail. You'd figure cell phones would find a way around that.
You would, but
especially with call waiting and stuff like that. But it's a fascinating thing that there's still a problem when two numbers call each other simultaneously.
My favorite one when I was a teenager and I'd deal with, I think I used to get there were a lot of people who would try and call me, and if someone's mm-hmm. calling your phone, even if you're not in,
mm-hmm.
if someone's calling your phone and using that connection, and then someone else tries to call in while that person is calling, even if no one's answering, mm-hmm. they get the engaged
signal because it's engaged.
Yeah. But when they hear that, they assume that you're in
and
on the phone.
Yeah.
So when they finally get through, they think you're ignoring them.
True.
Even though you're not in. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, back in the newsroom, Spike's still not getting the hang of this assistant editor lark.
No.
Assistant editor. Come on, Chris. He starts strolling the office talking about Linda, but I think by this point, everyone either wishes he'd changed the record or they simply can't work out what the hell he's on about. Like, he's clearly talking about Linda, but, like, in what context? I have no idea.
Do you know, sorry to interrupt, but do you know the name of the human in the dark jacket wearing a necktie and glasses that's behind Spike?
I do not.
All right.
There's been a guy in uniform who was the dude in the sort of denim rock jacket, and he has been wearing some glasses. Hang on a second, who could you give me that description again, please? Is it before Spike sets off?
It before and also as he sets off. So right now I'm at 1348 and you can see this person behind Spike.
Okay, I hope everyone's following along at home.
Yeah. I'm just really curious as to this person's name. If we don't know this person's name, that's fine.
Right, the guy who's basically me at school, before I put on all the weight. No, but whoever he is, he's the one who was wearing, like, the full-on denim.
Cool.
With the metal band patch.
Okay.
The last couple of episodes.
Thank you.
Why do you ask?
Oh, I don't know. Let's continue.
It's a school uniform, you know, I don't think it counts.
No, I know.
All right.
I'm just very curious if they actually give this person a name. All is well.
Never mind. Everyone gives Spike a polite smile, even though they don't give a toss now.
Ugh.
Although,
and he goes on and on about, and on and on and on.
Though, the crack about her favourite pastime being biting the drills off dentists is quite good. However, we've also learned that alongside Tids, there's clear proof that with that accent, Spike also shouldn't attempt to say the word Pierce on a kid's show. Which reminded me, because how often do you watch Terminator 2? Because I'm about to ruin something for you.
Oh, Terminator 2? I've seen it quite a few times.
All right. You know when John Connor first steals money from an ATM?
Yeah.
And is apparently saying, piece of cake.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say. He says, piss cake. Listen, piss cake. I now hope you will always hear it as piss cake. I did a Google with a... you know, quotes Terminator 2, then quotes piss cake to see how many of the... Very few. There are a few people who go, look, he actually says piss cake. But there's only about three or four people ever put that online. But there you go. I thought it from the very first time back in 91, and I think it now. In summary, piss cake. Anyway, we reveal that Colin has willingly or otherwise accepted the returns on the malfunctioning prams, which are now just stacked up behind him in a corner.
Yep.
In a ludicrous sight.
That was fantastic. Anyway,
some purposeful legs enter and they power their way to Linda's desk, and we realize it's Kenny who gives her a sticky surprise.
Chris.
I'm sorry.
He plops down the sticky surprise on her desk.
He does.
And then she looks at it kind of puzzled. And then they are basically interrupted by Spike, who once again starts thinking for himself.
Yeah. Which, now, what is it? I didn't write it down. What have I told you about thinking for yourself? Actually, I don't think it does give you cancer.
Which is completely ADR'd, and I really wish I knew what the original line was, because that's pretty awesome.
To be honest, that probably is the original line. It may just be as simple as they weren't able to capture good audio from him on the day, too far from whatever mic they were using.
Agreed.
Is my guess. There you go. He puts down the pot of what he calls high point jump juice. One whiff of that and you'll fly straight to the ground. Linda gets the idea, agrees that it's a good story, but Kenny tells her to forget it because he's got a better story, getting away with murder.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the Junior Gazette snaps into action.
Action, Kenny!
And this is a really great montage.
Fantastic stuff.
It is so good, especially the Sarah and Spike bits.
Mm. Well, Kenny delivers his rousing speech. All the stories for the new issue are cancelled because they got something big to do. Probably the biggest thing they'll ever do.
Why didn't anyone yell stop the press? I know, because the press wasn't engaged yet. I know, but that would have been amazing.
Also, they don't have the presses there.
That's true.
It's printed elsewhere. It's not printed on the premises.
Yeah.
But there you go. Also, like, they haven't gone to press. They're still putting the issue together.
True.
Is my guess. However, they could have held the front page.
True.
However, the news team's cooperation is more than appreciated. It is compulsory. At which point, Colin ruins Kenny's moment by having 14 prams collapse on him. But yes, we cut to the exciting things. We got a synth brass heavy version of the theme song. We got desks being moved. We got insufficiently large rolls of paper being carried into the newsroom. We got Fraz being dynamic. We got Spike doing a reverse Pygmalion / My Fair Lady.
We have someone writing hit list very crookedly.
We got, you're tough, you're hard. Now ask me, could I buy some solvent-based products, please? We've got still insufficiently large rolls of paper being brought into the newsroom. We got Julie and Tiddler planning their glue sniffer makeup applications. We got the continuing untaming of the Sarah. You're tough. You're mean, you're bad, okay? You're street. You're the kind of person who's rude to old people, you know? You get up from the dinner table, you don't ask permission. You're the kind of person who'd eat a jam donut, you know, and you won't wipe your mouth afterwards. You are bad, so go and ask me. Can I buy some solvents, please? the sufficiently large paper has arrived.
Hey.
And we'll see its purpose soon enough. Linda tries to get Colin, who's still entangled in various prams, involved in order to improve his image. Because she has an idea, which we'll learn about later. While someone's crookedly writing hit list on some sheets behind him, Kenny phones Mrs. Elliot to ensure that Jenny knows to buy the next copy of the Junior Gazette. So presumably he's pretty confident that they're going to turn up a big, you know, number of hits on his sting operation. But yeah, the sufficiently large piece of paper is turning into a map. Now, do you want to talk map now or later when it's more fully formed?
Now is fine.
Cool. Map. I remember you wanted to talk about the map.
Yes. The map, first of all, they don't use the entirety of the paper. So I think maybe one of those previous rolls would have been adequate. So fuck off, Linda. And also, a little later on, when it's fully formed, they bring out what basically is akin to what a croupier would use in a craps table.
Or I thought of strategic planning for old-timey war scenarios.
Yeah, so it's one of those. Does that particular implement have a name?
If it has got, I couldn't find it while I was writing up my stuff. What have I got?
Reachy stick. Got, An angle reachy stick.
I've just got implements to move them about. Yeah. Is what I've got.
Which was
and
fantastic.
Plastic markers.
Yes. Yeah. So boy, so that map was amazing. Especially later on when it's fully formed and you know we have everything. But as soon as I saw that they were drawing a map, I was like, oh man, this is gonna be like real time strategic planning and it's great. Great.
Do you want to guess at its accuracy for the real area around the Junior Gazette building?
Oh, I would guess 0% accuracy.
Absolutely zero.
I'm not surprised.
Like, where they've got the road, if you head off to the right towards this town, you're going to end up in a canal within
There's always
seconds.
A canal!
Yes, night boat, the crime-solving boat. In that case, it could have helped with the sting operation, mm-hmm. but never mind. Colin's against this. Colin is against the sting operation, yep. I guess, because some of the shops on the hit list advertise with the paper. Linda wonders if he ever thinks of anything other than money. Colin's drawing something of a blank.
Mm-hmm.
There.
It's been so long, he says later.
Kenny again having. This is twice now, having apparently spoken to Mrs. Elliot, knowing that Jenny isn't in, then immediately calls back again because he's doing it again now. And we have. This series has mostly shown the slim digital BT British Telecom phone. We have a rare appearance here of the previous British Telecom rotary phone, and they are as loud as I remember.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And the appearance of the UK ringtone, the bring, the double that you don't get so often. I've never been able to work out if that or the single ring, like American one that I hear mostly in films, is more insistent.
Hmm.
I feel the double feels more polite. The other one's like, ing, ing, like, answer. But who knows? Yeah. I like the idea that the UK ringtone is just slightly more polite. But even that is kind of phased out now because everyone has digital phones at home that make whatever noise you want it to make, even on the
There's a call, ring. There's a call, there's a call, there's a call.
Oh, I've heard some really fucking annoying ones. And I don't wish to give them any airtime here.
Agreed.
So, yeah, Kenny's clearly trying to call back. Jenny's just standing there in her uniform, just watching the phone ring.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the map is complete. and all the stuff we talked about, the plastic markers, mm-hmm. the pointy croupier implements. And we see that in the Junior Gazette world, the nearest shop that they're going to hit is Henderson's, which is the place Tommy Anderson was due mm-hmm. to open back at Deadline.
No credit.
Oh, terrifying. So, anyway, the sting is on. And Franz, with a load of fake zits plastered on his face, looking more gormless than usual, by some Ronson old light off yours. Solvent abuse was like, it was the big thing at the time. Mm-hmm. Again, like, a bit, like I mentioned ram raiding before, but like, you know, every so often you go that, oh no, all the kids are doing meow meow now. You know, it was for like 6 months, this horrifying terror that the world will never be the same again.
No.
And it's fine. Solvent abuse, it was that way in the 80s because we were shit poor and it was the only thing that was available to kids that they could get slightly sort of mind-bend on.
Exactly.
But yes, if they would put the empty things in bags, hold it around their mouth, and but what it does is, it makes your skin come up, sort of acne around mm-hmm. the mouth. When I was a teenager, obviously I had acne. A lot of it did concentrate around my mouth, so I did remember my parents worried that I was abusing solvents.
That's interesting.
Wasn't abusing solvents, didn't drink, didn't smoke at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't doing any drugs of any kind because I was just not that kind of guy. So it was really odd. But what I was, however, was shit at school. So I think I was just looking for any old reason. I think my reason was that I lived 7 miles from my school and it took me a long time to get there and then get back. And I didn't have much time for schoolwork, but that is what happens when you go to the school where the headmaster is the husband of someone your dad works with and you have a word, and I end up going to a school well outside my catchment area. Hooray for me. I'm going to blame all my failings on other things. Not my fault.
Very sensible.
Yeah, I know, but there you go. My life wouldn't be my life if I'd gone school nearer, because even though I don't necessarily know many of the people I met there, some of the people I met there introduced me to other people and to other things and, you know, and things like that, and it's part of the continuity of Chris.
Exactly.
So there you go. Ronson old lighter fluid, no attempt to hide the
no
manufacturer here.
No.
And if you try to get lighter fluid in a shop, you've got to ask for it because it's behind the counter.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because they won't sell it to an obvious glue sniffer, but because what an obvious glue sniffer is more likely to do if it's just about the shop is put it in their pocket and leave.
Yeah. Or, you know, it could be arsonists.
Or arsonists, indeed. That's a good point.
It's like when I walk into a store and I see knives at child level.
Oh.
And yes, they're wrapped in plastic, but there's a knife there.
Yes. Oh, dear. No, that's not good at all.
No.
I don't like it, sir. But anyway, once the transaction's through, Danny enters the premises and gets a shot of the guy at the counter. Does he think it's perfectly all right to sell dangerous solvents to an obvious glue sniffer? And I think, I don't know how obvious Fraz is, but actually he does pull off a really shifty...
It was very good.
You know, it's not just that he's got zits all over the place. He's like, without the eye contact, he doesn't say anything. He makes little sniffy noises.
Yeah.
It's good. And, I suppose in the fiction, he's meant to look clearly under 18 because that's the age.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. Out in the street, Spike with a map on his clipboard that, as far as I can tell, doesn't correspond even with the map at the office.
Agreed. Hold the presses. Who is the gentleman in the jacket with the glasses?
On the far right,
is
now.
Is that Keith / Jeff?
That is Keith. He's the guy Keith. I called Jeff before. Jeff doesn't wear glasses. Keith wears glasses.
Thank
and
you.
That is the error. And I'm glad you noticed him at, scroll.
Oh, 1938.
I've got 1937 here, but that's not bad. I'm glad you noticed, Keith. Mm-hmm. Because Keith is the guy last week from with the pink t-shirt.
Oh, yes.
And he's the guy this week with that fucking jacket, man, and those chinos. He looks cool.
A green shirt. I will be mentioning it later.
Let's go up to 1937 here quickly. I've started using Truncate Silence, so... all I use Audacity for.
That's great.
I put the thing in it, Truncate Silence, get out again.
That's
SoundForge
great.
Can do something like that, but it's actually a bit too complicated. Uh-huh. So what I'm learning is that if there's a bit where I want there to be a gap, I just am silent. But there you go. Oh, fucking hell, Keith. Yes, Keith. I'm going to include the glasses as part of the outfit. I know it's not.
Still, you wear them. I'm wearing mine now.
Yeah, me too. I have to. Otherwise, I can't see.
Same here, although I do wear contact lenses.
Ah, neat. So anyway, Spike is sending kids to as many different shops as he can, getting to report back with their purchases, should any of them successfully get any. Sarah got a tin of something at the supermarket. So Danny's dispatched for the shaming photograph, so I hope he doesn't get the wrong supermarket. There you go. He tells Sarah she's doing well. She tells him to go shove it, and he's extremely pleased.
Yeah.
Spike phones his progress into the newsroom, and it's a hit for Henderson's, those bastards.
Yeah. It's a hit. This entire process is fantastic. All of it. And the people bringing in solvents, the people's use of public telephones.
Yeah, what?
And then later on, a non-use of a public telephone.
Oh, hang on a second. I don't remember that one. I do remember that one. Sorry.
That's fine.
Yeah, we see it all coordinated. It's not just Spike. There's multiple teams out of there covering as much area as possible in a short space of time, presumably before store owners can talk to each other and work out what's going on.
We finally found a use for all those prams.
Yep, the haul from Charlotte Street goes in pram number 8, because 10 of the 40 prams have now been turned into solvent receptacles for the spoils of the solvent sting. Colin's doing the cheekiest scheme imaginable. This is brilliant.
Yeah.
Cheeky. So, he's soliciting advertising from the companies that they're exposing on the understanding the paper is running a big feature on them, which is true.
It's true.
And that an advert would beef up the impact. And so because they're getting, like, double the amount, like, the advert and the thing itself is advertising, he's charging them double the going amount for the advertising.
He's so proud of his plan, he neglects to remember that it wasn't his plan to begin with.
No, not his plan, and therefore he is also... seems to have either not known or is completely unaware that that is not profit. That money is being donated to a hospital.
Yeah. And then the headline, which it's they good. Tease. Exposed.
The shops that sell death.
And
yeah, Julia Reifer.
Exposed. It was fantastic.
It's great. You can just about read this, and you can read that it is all proper there. You know, the Junior Gazette has been an important investigation. However, you know the novelization I mentioned earlier? Mm-hmm. The novelization covers interface and how to make a killing parts 1 and 2.
Yeah.
It's basically a sort of little Billy Homer trilogy. It's called Public Exposure. It's Press Gang issue 2 by Bill Moffat, Stephen. Mm-hmm. And it's got a sort of version of the front cover. It just says exposed. It doesn't say the shops that sell death, because that would be a little plot spoiler.
Yeah.
And it's got that shifty picture of Peter from Peter's Market on there. Now, it's interesting that holding the thing up for a couple of seconds on television, where you can't really read it very well, they wrote an actual story.
Yeah.
And on the front cover of the book, where you can read it, the story for Exposed begins... The skies above southern Britain were dotted with disoriented pigeons yesterday after a bizarre race disaster. And sightings of birds which should have been safely home in northern lofts were reported from Kent to the West Country. And it just carries on about disorientated pigeons.
That's ridiculous. At least it wasn't Lorem Ipsum.
That's true. Dolor. And you'll notice that for a transatlantic audience, I said both disoriented and disorientated. Disoriented,
yes.
Just for, you know, for everyone. I'm a nice guy that way. Mm. But it's hard to tell here, but yeah, the page has that. It's got the explanation of the Junior Gazette's been involved in an important investigation into the shops that sell items in contravention of the Intoxicating Substances Supply Act of 1985, which is then replicated at the bottom of the page.
That's awesome.
So on the front page, the actual Supply Act is there as information for the kids. And that act was passed in 1985 to cover things that were not controlled by the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971, that could still elicit an intoxicating response like solvents. And it limited their sale to people of 18 years and above. Therefore, yes, selling them to anyone under that age is completely illegal.
Yeah. Fantastic. So, yeah,
it's good stuff. We get an excellent montage here of kids running to and from shops, hit markers being placed on the map, page mock-ups naming and shaming the shops, or stores if you prefer, but the headline says shops. You're going to get used to
it's a shops.
Where people don't like do woodwork or metalwork.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And they're naming and shaming the shops that supplied. We cut to Jenny Elliott reading the finished article with a pretty genuine smile, though.
Mm-hmm.
As you said earlier, she's not ready to call Kenny back just
no.
yet.
No. Maybe she just didn't have whatever it cost to make a call back then.
Yeah. So this is one of the better uses of the issue just being out. Because it's out and done, and Linda's manning the phones at the office, politely telling the caller that they can and will verify everything in the issue if asked. And it turns out that this phone call was the fourth death threat that day, which makes her sign off, which was, "You're too kind, please call again."
Yeah.
Particularly sarcastic.
It is. Perfect, Linda.
Mm. I'm about to raise the spectre of the Press Gang series treatment again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day, I mentioned that it didn't feature Mr. Sullivan as one of the adult characters.
Yeah.
But it featured Amanda, I've forgotten her name now, the town planner from Photo Finish, and Matt Kerr. But also a police inspector called Inspector Hawkins.
Oh.
Who had a soft spot for the junior paper and was kind of their liaison, as you were, with the police. And this is, as far as I know, the only mention Inspector Hawkins ever gets.
Oh.
Because Kenny's been to the police station to see him, and Hawkins is like, "Oh, I can't condone your actions, but secretly I'm going to look into it, but I can't tell you that I am, but we will."
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get back to you. Matt Kerr thinks it's the best issue of the Junior Gazette that's ever been produced, wants to meet Kenny to shake his hand in person.
No, maybe he should have crossed the street and done it.
Yes. Damn you,
pompous
Kerr.
Asshole.
Hello, Kenny.
Can you let Kenny know that I would like to shake his hand? Thank you very much.
This is why Matt Kerr was still Matt Berry, wasn't it? Hello, Kenny.
Hello, Kenny.
Pleasure to meet you.
Isn't it?
You bastard.
That's right. Oh,
Father!
Garth Marenghi's.
Yes. I'm Dr. Sanchez. You're a woman. Christ. Anyway, Linda officially welcomes Kenny back to the news team, and in a nicely warm moment, The genuinely warm moment between the two of them fires Spike as temporary acting assistant editor.
You won't regret this, boss.
Thanks, boss. You won't regret this.
I love it. That was perfect. That was really great.
Before he was about to head off, Linda was going to tell Kenny something, but decides not to. And when Kenny arrives at his desk, he's greeted by a familiar plastic case.
Hello.
Yeah. Instead
Another
of calling
mystery?
Kenny, someone swapped cases with me. What's going on? Jenny's arrived at the Junior Gazette in person to thank him, because no other guys tried to close down a business for her, so she's rightly impressed.
That's amazing.
Billy can't be doing with this happy ending malarkey, so he inserts himself in their conversation to try and make it a teeny bit more bizarre. But their sheer, sweaty, animal sexual chemistry overrides any oddness Billy can provide, and they essentially ignore him and sod off.
Mm-hmm.
Though he does fire off one of his well-rehearsed lines, "Don't let the wheelchair fool you, kid. I'm just leaving my body to science in stages."
Wow.
He's got books of these at home. Well, you know, notepad things on his computer.
Yeah.
Text files, that's the word I'm after.
Yes.
Duh. Jenny's a little overwhelmed by the aftermath of the expose, seeing Linda fielding phone calls, Maggie's shop owners, accusing the paper of acting irresponsibly, and Kenny's earlier joke about putting people out of business for a friend. I think she feels slightly guilty at the huge repercussions of her little chalk outline plan a couple of years ago. Because some people could lose their living and get your drinks ready, kids. Because it's time for Kenny's final blockbuster line. These people aren't making a living, Jenny.
They're making a killing.
Boom. Showers of sparks and glitter. End music. And then Fraz and Colin discuss Colin hiding in a cupboard, wearing dark glasses and a beard. To which his response is, "Oh no, puberty." Which is brilliant.
I know. It's hilarious. It's really great.
That is How I Make a Killing, parts 1 and 2.
Yep.
Fucking great.
Really great, actually. But we'll get to that soon.
Yeah, I think this is the point where a lot of people took this seriously.
Sorry, dropped something. I'll be right back.
No problem. I'll drop some stuff as well.
Hey.
Yeah. Why? That's not going to come out on the recording. Never mind. It would just be me going. Bleh.
It was actually just you going.
Yeah, I know, but the other microphone might have picked stuff up. I just now have to pick up some Nivea moisturizer. Oh, no, it's Vaseline moisturizer from the floor. There you go. Just the bottle off. No, Anyway.
Agreed.
This does something... Well, rather, this doesn't do something that I would have expected in a kids' show. And I know I've had a lot of this with some of our American listeners when they were talking about Billy's episode.
Yeah.
How, yeah, I don't want to go, oh, in America they'd have done this like really badly because like that's really snooty, and they may not have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the idea that there would be a more hammered home lesson.
Yeah. About glue sniffing and solvent abuse, yeah.
Like, they make it clear that a kid got a bit high and, you know, fell off a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no section where, like, a responsible person sits down and tells a character, aka the audience, like, this is bad. This is a bad thing.
Agreed.
And this is why you shouldn't do it, and you'll make your family sad.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I mean, it's clear from the narrative that it's not pro glue sniffing.
No.
But it does not just clunk you with it. And that's.
No. It's more fantastic. About what the kids are doing to combat it, which is great.
Yeah. And, the death story is pretty good, but it wouldn't have. This one actually has a beneficial, you know, outcome. Oh, I was reading in the, you know, we were talking about Chrissy Stewart trying to get Billy's interview.
Yeah.
The novelization goes a little further into her thought process, I think you'll like as well. Yeah. Like, she feels bad that she put her foot in her mouth talking to him, but partially her, according to the novelization, of course, partially her reasoning behind wanting to write the story is for other people who have the same condition or other paralysis like Billy, who want to read more about it or have not heard necessarily, for example, of the assistive technology that he uses.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in a way, it could educate people who are in that situation themselves and therefore have a beneficial side effect. And that's not a thing I thought of at the time.
Neither did I. That's actually pretty good.
And I like it. Now, I had a look at, because I always get this wrong, so I had a look at the, the running order
that
worked out. So I've got it. We're in what I currently call further discussion.
Yes, we are.
I have talked a lot again. I kind of performed the episode to you again this week.
That's fine.
Sorry about that.
But it's useful because there are things it's a short show. And there's lots of stuff going on. It's very dense and full of things. So the fact that we're going over it chronologically rather than just freestyling, I think lends itself to actually being able to pinpoint some things that we would have otherwise missed.
Yes, that's true.
So I'm totally cool with that. I don't mind it at all. It's not something that I tend to do on other podcasts, but I think this show lends itself a little bit more to that, especially with the fact that it is so short. You know, it's a half-hour show. I really enjoyed this episode. Again, kind of like what you're saying, it's not a very special episode of Press Gang where it's not like Tom Hanks is a guest star and he's rummaging through the pantry trying to find vanilla extract because he wants to get drunk, right? It's not that kind of special episode.
That's a reference that is lost the fuck on me, guy.
Family Ties with Michael J. Fox and Meredith Baxter Burney and Tina Yothers and Justine Bateman and Michael Gross. Oh, yeah. Loved that show growing up. Tom Hanks played Meredith Baxter Burney's brother. He visited and he's an alcoholic. And middle of the night, Alex wants to make himself a sandwich and his uncle is downstairs rummaging for booze and finds vanilla extract. And guzzles it down and smacks Alex P. Keaton across the face.
But that's basically
him hitting rock bottom. So that kind of typical, a character is struggling and hits rock bottom and they need help finally type stuff, which you would see typically in a very special episode about some kind of drug abuse. Not here. This is actually all after the fact and it's actually all, what can we do to fix it? Which is why the scene... where Kenny is telling Linda, yeah, it's a nice story, but here's a better thing we could do, is so important and so different and really great. Really, really great.
Absolutely. And it's a great Kenny episode as well. You get a far better sense of him.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure. We have not really had a lot of Kenny, and now and all of the Kenny in this episode was great.
Mm-hmm. There you go. But yeah, I think it's stronger for all of those things. Or the like, it doesn't stop at the end and then fade up and you got Julia Sawala like sitting there, right, straight to camera going, hello, I'm Julia Sawala.
Voila.
In this episode, we saw, wow. Yeah, I like it. Let's rate this thing.
Yes.
I've rated it 5 contraventions of the Intoxicating Substance Act 1985. I don't normally do the wacky ratings, but I couldn't resist that one.
Yeah. I'd say, 5 out of 5 for me as well.
I kind of wonder if I've done a 5 on this one before, and I think I did.
You did. Yeah. Yeah, 5 out of 5 for me. This was grand. This was everything. This was everything and more. This was dense. It was, even Colin's storyline was ridiculous to the point where, oh, Colin, you know.
There was almost no point to it except that they needed a thing to put the solvents in. Like,
maybe.
That's kind of the reason why that story
that as a possible
existed.
Reason why, but I do kind of dislike, but at the same time appreciate the fact that, you know, they're presenting Colin as someone who would sell a used pram without brakes.
I think he's not actually a bad guy. I think what he actually has is sort of tunnel vision. He doesn't necessarily think about the implications of much beyond the sell.
Agreed.
Or the sale, rather than the cell, in case anyone thinks I'm referring to him being in a cell, which he may well be if he goes on at this rate.
That weird movie with Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, yes, indeed. I've not seen it, but I understand shite.
With the sliced horse. Yeah, it's really shit.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. So, shall we go on to BDWD?
Yes, we shall.
All right, then, hit that sting in order to present... Best Dressed, Worst Dressed, and sponsored by RamJackPodcast.com. I'm just saying that in increasingly strange voices.
That's fine.
So, am I to say you're absolutely set on Keith?
Well, I have 2 contenders. One is Keith with the green shirt and that jacket.
I've got 2 as well. My other one may come as a surprise.
And my one may come as a surprise. My other one is Sarah.
Oh, that is a surprise.
With
dungarees.
The purple top and the denim shirt.
Oh, wow.
A skirt. Denim
where are
skirt.
We at?
Oh, it was earlier on. I've actually think I've closed that tab. I haven't closed that tab at all. Spike was handing out assignments, and he was talking about the dentist drill being bitten off by Linda.
Right, yes.
And then he and Sarah have a bit of an exchange. It was before she put on the overalls of shame, which I might mention later. But basically, where are you at?
Yeah, give me a timestamp on that one.
That's before this. That's interesting. What was the timestamp I gave you earlier?
For Keith.
For guy that you said looked like you before you put on the weight?
Oh, Christ. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
Sorry about this.
No worries. Oh, it's okay. But regardless, she was wearing a nice purple top.
Yeah.
With shirt collars and a denim skirt. She was kind of up there. I also had Colin with the blue and green striped short sleeve shirt.
Hang on, we got Tiddler in her pink top. We've got this is at the same time. I've got about 13:49 is the guy in the blazer with the tie half undone.
Yes,
I've realized why you might have mentioned him now.
Yeah.
And there's girl with curly hair.
Yeah.
Who smiles politely. There's blue and striped top. There's not Randa, I don't think.
No.
There's Julie looking sort of good, but too difficult to put. There's Linda Wanning wearing one of her three outfits.
Mm-hmm. I have 14:31.
Oh, cool. This will take me a little while longer. I would normally say, don't worry, we'll edit this out. But it's Sarah in a short skirt.
Skirt and the purple top, which is nice, with the black collar.
That does not happen very often.
No. Not at all, which is why, for me, it was kind of glaring.
Yeah. She's got a grin on her face as well, which also doesn't happen.
Exactly. And I will say that she was a contender. Colin, near the beginning of the episode.
Which I realize sounds like a bloke going, oh, cheer up, love, it might never happen. Give us a smile. Not really what I was going for there. Sorry about that. No, it wasn't at all. You notice I go into wanker voice again.
Yeah. Colin was wearing a blue and green short sleeved shirt near the beginning when he was on the phone. That wasn't bad. But for me, it's Keith all the way. The green shirt with a black jacket. Do you call that a bomber jacket? It's fabric instead of leather?
That is interesting. I would just note it's a jacket. I have heard bomber jacket, donkey jacket. Donkey jacket is more of a leather
thing. It's one of those jackets with the elastic. I don't know if you call that a waistband, but maybe it's a waistband. And usually has stripes on the sleeve cuffs and stuff. And Keith looked great in that. So he's my best dressed.
All hail Keith. I've got a surprise contender.
Yep.
Go to 6:30 and play.
6:30. See, this I can do. Look at that. 6:30. Aha! I knew it, but guess where I put him?
You don't like the big long bohemian shirt that Danny's got on here?
The big long bohemian gray and white shirt is one of my contenders for worst dressed.
Oh my god, it turns out we differ on some points, scenario. Motherfucker.
Well, no, but he's not my winner, however. So.
I
totally noticed it and I was like, nope.
Okay, well then in that case it's got to be Keith. We both have Keith in our list.
Keith.
He's there. I've got one for worst dressed. I've got only one person. There's only one person it can be for me.
And that would be?
No, I want to hear yours first.
Beginning of the episode, Tids.
Oh, in the yellow?
The yellow / blue top and the red / black bottom.
Okay. That's also, she's got a, I remember this backpack as well. The backpack itself
is you could totally
red, yellow,
see
and
it.
Blue.
Yeah.
That's very in keeping. I like that. It's not really featured.
No, but it's just hanging off the back of a chair.
Okay, but in that same shot, we
also have Sarah with the overalls and a belt. Why?
Is that in her go shove it area?
Yeah. No, previously when she's being trained.
Yeah. The untaming of the Sarah. As
exactly. And who's yours?
And you had Danny in your list as well.
I did have Danny, but for me, it's definitely Tids.
Oh, mine is very simple. Mine is Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Peter's Market. Just fucking slubby, button-up shirt, not buttoned up all the way.
It was terrible. It's true. You know what? In a very technical sense, he is dressed very poorly.
Yeah, he just looks greasy and unpleasant. He's meant to.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to the actor himself.
No, no.
You know, the character is meant to be seedy and unpleasant, and his wink is meant to be horrible.
Ugh.
And he's reading an article about a prostitute on a kids' program.
Well, she wasn't a prostitute on a kids' program. That's not no, the article he true. Was reading. Yeah,
I like it's just happens to be that that's the page he's landed on. But there's a big old close up of it, which is hilarious.
It's really funny.
And there you go. It's Peter for me.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for his wife because Peter is clearly married, or at least wears a wedding ring for no reason.
For no reason. Yeah, you know what? I'll give it to Peter all the way. I like kids too much.
We don't have to agree.
We don't, but you know what? If one were to present me a choice, Peter or Tids, I would say Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just neglected to include him.
Tids is still doing colourful 90s stuff.
This is true.
Although later on she does wear that top again from a night in that was a night in nightmare. Oh, shut up, Chris. Right, it's feedback time.
Yep.
And we got voicemails all over the place, to be honest with you. And
shall we do Stephanie's Confederate flag mumbo jumbo first?
That's probably a good idea. I don't know, because it's clearly not about this episode, is
no.
it? Because it was what was it? Was it? It was Interface. Of course,
it was Interface. The, yeah.
Now. Mm-hmm. Again, people would have only seen this on the Facebook group if they were there, but I linked to a thing from like 1980 or whatever that had Duncan Preston in, who played Mr. Homer, Douglas Homer, and it was a kind of Stranger Danger PSA or a, you know, public information film, a PIF in the UK, if you like, and he was creeping out over school kids in his Ford Cortina Mark III, and as he pulled away, you spotted...
I did.
In his back window, not just a Confederate flag, but basically exactly whatever the item is, exactly the same elongated, rectangular Confederate flag item in the back of that car window 8 years previous, 8 years prior to the episode.
Yeah.
No idea.
It's really something.
No idea what the hell there. So, Steph is from Alabama, so she may have something to say about the Confederate flag.
She may. Are you queued up?
I am queued up.
So am I.
All right, count it off, guy.
We're going to hit play when I say play. Three, two, one, play.
Okay.
Hey, Last Word Podcast. This Hello. Is Stephanie. I wanted to talk about the Confederate flag. Yep. Yes. We don't, I mean, it's not really a thing here in Alabama. I mean, I think, you know, those kids... Those, like, 20-year-old guys who are, like, searching for their identity, and so then they want, like, something to express their, or join up with, or whatever. Kind of like, you know, how you have some kids that in England, they want to join the skinheads, or, or not really join the skinheads, but kind of be rebellious. We kind of have that with, like, the 19, 20-year-olds here who are, like, flying the rebel flag and
it's posited as the rebel flag
and,
isn't it,
you know, so. Whatever, because they're just looking for something to grasp onto as an identity. But mainly here in Southern culture, everybody, it's more of the University of Alabama football and who the populist kind of flock to show, to express their, I don't know, man. I just wish that I could afford to send my kid to that school. Because that's the thing. Nobody.
This is just going places.
This is way off topic. It didn't even have anything to do with the Confederate flag anymore. All I'm saying is, if we do have the Confederate flag here on things, maybe it's merchandise, you know, maybe it's marketing to say, you know, Southern tradition, Southern culture. But as in general, people don't really, but I think that if you did, if somebody was saying that, oh no, we shouldn't get rid of the Confederate flag because it stands for Southern history and culture and pride. I think that you would get an argument saying that that's crazy, that it represents racism or slavery because, you know, white people don't want to accept that there is racism. So that would cause them to admit that it does exist. So, therefore, Like, I would never wear a Confederate flag, and if we could, you know, get rid of it, that is fine with me, because I would not want to, you know, just because it doesn't offend me, yes, it may offend other people, and so therefore, let's get rid of it. Who cares? Southern history. We lost the war. What does it matter? I mean, what does it matter? All right. This is crazy, I know.
Bye. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Steph.
Puts me in mind of referring to the British Empire earlier. It's like, yeah, whatever.
I think Stephanie's attempt to explain this position, I think, speaks to how weird a thing that flag is. Because it's this strange kind of thing from, you know, and it's so strangely placed on this show because, you know, there are no Confederates.
No.
In the show, there's no pro-slavery bent on the show or in that piff. So at a certain point of view, it's like, well, what do you actually do with this thing that's still like kind of pervasive and some people just put it on stuff to sell more t-shirts? I think it's interesting how someone who is definitely from the South and in the South herself might have some difficulty pinpointing what this stupid thing is about.
Yeah. I have, you know, I was familiar with the notion of it as a rebel symbol, whatever that's meant to mean, you know?
Yeah.
But also, I think she hit the nail on the head of how some unpleasant things are able to survive, which is, you know, basically people go, well, it doesn't bother me, so it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's worth me attempting to make a change in my life. That's exactly. That's too much effort.
Yeah.
And so they don't do that. Right, I'm going to suggest the one that isn't from Steph or Matt. Now, I know there's a name there, but I have actually listened to this because I was baffled by it, and this person doesn't normally send voicemails, and it turns out they're doing a thing, and cool. I wanted to hear what it was.
All right.
So, are you ready?
Almost.
It's the one that's a series of letters, CGSK or whatever.
Yeah, I believe I'm queued up. Are you ready to count down?
Yeah, okay then. Right. Okay, 3, 2, 1, play.
Dear Junior Gazette, ooh. I am a creepy, greasy shopkeeper. As a member of Creepy Greasy Shopkeepers Local 1128, I object to our portrayal in this episode. We at CGSK are in local shops to serve your local needs. What if clotted creams were illegal to sell to overweight people? You'd call us heroes for providing that particular product. I maintain that solvent-based glues are essential to our local glue sniffers, and at such reasonable prices, why, they are the ones taking advantage of us.
That's beautiful.
That was lovely, and very, very frightening all at once.
I shall now reveal that was Brandon.
Brandon.
He was like, oh, I hope the accent was okay. That accent was great. Brandon is from Texas. And that's the voice he pulled impressive. Out as Creepy Greasy Shopkeeper. I think it was impressive.
Dear Junior Gazette.
I am a Creepy Greasy Shopkeeper. Oh, that was brilliant. Well done, Brandon.
I think that would be, that's fantastic. Thank you, Brandon. That was lovely.
We have one more from Steph. She sent us a tweet that said, I need privacy to do feedback, which makes me suspect she didn't quite get through this one.
Let's hope that it works out. Let me queue it up.
Okay.
And all right. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play.
Hello, okay. Last Word Podcast. Oh, it's this quiet. Is Stephanie. This is feedback for How to Make a Killing Part 2.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this little two-parter.
I mean, so did I. The
series has gotten serious.
I know.
Suddenly, like, the world has really expanded from just the Junior Gazette. Shit got real. I've enjoyed episodes here and there, but here comes somebody. They hear me. Talk to you later. Bye.
That's great. I love it.
That's
Steph. Steph's feedback is always winner. For those of you who may not be aware, Stephanie Smith is a wonderful human who hosts a podcast I'm on called Potential Cast, and indeed, was also a podcasting partner of Chris's on Cue the Film back
oh
in the
yes
day.
Indeed my where I got my start prior yeah. to that I was on Three Heroes.
Ah yes.
I was a kind of a replacement hero at this point. There were four heroes mm-hmm. as well. I was a replacement for Paul from Australia, and who I've never been on a podcast with. Very odd. And yeah, I got started that because I sent in amusing feedback. They went, Katerina from that apparently said, "I want him." Well, she meant on the show, not sexually.
Yeah, yeah. Understood.
I've met her a number of times, and that hasn't happened.
Oh, so, good. your wife will be pleased to hear
that. She will be pleased to hear that.
All right, so I think we have another bit of ostentatiously
mentioned it. Yeah, no, Steph's feedback just then sounded like she was like reporting in from a war zone or some kind of.
I'm wondering if she was in the back of a shop and about to try and buy a solvent-based product.
Also, a fine example of Steph swearing, which I'm afraid amuses me far too much.
Yeah,
I got a small collection of them, and I have got a doozy which I was going to isolate and send to you, but I'd have to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't, essentially, it's her saying the phrase "more cunt."
Ah,
more cunt.
So now I've left you with that concept. Let's bother Matt. He has got an email and a voicemail.
Yeah.
So I suggest, Guy, get reading.
Feedback for The Boy Who Sniffed Glue and Flew, aka How to Make a Killing, Part the Second. Illyrio and I can take our victory laps now because we both correctly predicted the cause of young Michael Elliott's death. Pat's self on back.
Oh, yes, but I at the time, you had two theories. One was pushing and one was drugs.
Yeah.
So my end song was Andrew WK's Pushing Drugs.
Pushing Drugs, love it.
Featuring the phrase, "I'll push you off the roof if you are too afraid to jump," which mm-hmm. was just a complete coincidence having picked mm-hmm. the title. But it was amazing, and also it's a great song.
Yeah. We should party more, by the way.
Yeah. Yes.
When Danny said he saw Kenny at the station at 4:20, I was like, yeah, Kenny's getting baked.
Oh, dear.
Kenny was kind of amazing this week. He conducted a serious piece of investigative journalism, and he got the girl. Nicely done, old chap.
Mm. Linda, yes. It's not made clear in this episode, but yeah. he does actually start going out with Jenny Elliott at this point.
Yeah, I assume so. I mean, yeah. I mean, come on, she dropped a briefcase on his desk.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's
you know what that means, folks?
Yeah.
Woo. That's implied consent. No, it's not. It's manufactured consent. No, that's something else. Never mind. Linda was in full-on bonkers mode. She's such a kook. I love her. Colin apparently sold faulty prams and went to jail for infanticide.
Yeah, like I intimated earlier.
Tits was again... Aw, oh, Matt. Tits was again wearing that horrible Technicolor sweater jacket. For a character that claims he doesn't want to be defined by his condition, Billy references his tetraplegia every single goddamn second. Yes, that does kind of bother me now. Hopefully it'll wear off. I wasn't sold on Kenny and the chalk outline mystery plot of part one, but this was a very solid conclusion. So 5 out of 5 small businesses ruined by meddling kids.
Mm.
And since you're both insecure and need a formal sign-off, goodbye and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
I enjoy you playing to my insecurity.
Insecurities.
All right, and he has voice attachments as well.
I know.
He's going to be louder than Steph, so I think I'll turn my volume back down again.
Doop, 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 doop. Thanks for the reminder.
Oh, no worries.
All right. Play in 3, ooh. 2,
yep.
1. Play.
Oh, it's just another boring day in Norbridge, working at this shop that's just a mess, just crap all over the shelves. No one's going to buy any of this. Oh, maybe this kid will buy something. Looks like kind of a doof with his jeans and jean jacket. Oh, he's coming over here.
Excuse me?
Yes, how may I help you, young Jay Leno?
You don't know me, but a friend of mine used to come here and he used to buy glue.
Your friend bought glue. Wow, that is an amazing story. Okay, I'll bite. What kind of glue?
Solvent-based.
Yep, I got some right here. That'll be £2. Thank you. There you go. Have fun. And hello to you too, young man. I see you are also purchasing glue for some reason.
Yo, Danny!
Who? Ah! Where the hell did he come from? Why do you take my picture? I don't consent to any of this. Who are you people?
Can I ask you why you think it's perfectly alright to sell dangerous solvents to an obvious glue sniffer?
How the hell would I know what a glue sniffer looks like? I just assumed you were crafty kids. You were going to build something out of popsicle sticks. I'm just trying to run a business here. I've got a family to support. Who the hell are you?
Junior Gazette.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is.
Lovely. Lovely bit of theater there. Thank you very much, Matt and Brandon, again for I'm gonna say all the voicemails were entertaining.
But yeah, two voicemails posing as the shopkeeper this week is quite something.
I love it. And one voicemail was someone was found out and discovered.
Yeah.
And another one where Steph rambled on about the affordability of university education. Is that what that one was about?
I haven't got a clue.
It's good. Well, anyway, love it. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, super thanks.
Tell your friends.
I put out like so many calls for feedback this week. Sorry, everyone.
Don't apologize.
Quite dull.
You know, people are free to ignore your calls for feedback.
That is true.
You know, it's don't feel bad about asking people for feedback.
Don't
we should totally ask
me.
People
Do
for feedback all the time,
me.
But only when we're
you
about to record.
You can never ignore me.
Sorry, I was just having a moment there. And
you're back. You're back.
Super liminal. join the Navy. Anyway, that's enough of this week. Do you want to hear about next week?
I do. What's the title for next week?
Next week is Both Sides of the Paper.
Hmm.
Have a guess.
Someone wrote an exam, thought they were done, but forgot to look at the other side of the paper.
Well, I don't know if it happens there, but exams in this country, they do say use both sides of the paper. So it could be exam related. It could be literally about the newspaper. I think it's about an unpopular cost-saving toilet roll procedure at the Junior Gazette.
That's enough. No, that's not allowed. I will not allow that. That's terrible.
All right, then. You don't want to hear any more, then.
Not of that theory.
Well, in that case, send us your feedback, everyone, to lastwordpodcast@gmail.com.
Do so, please.
Having checked out Both Sides of the Paper, just whack Press Gang Both Sides of the Paper into YouTube, and you'll bring it up.
Nice.
Especially if you do see people using both sides of the toilet paper, then you really will bring it up.
Oh my.
Illyrio, only you can shut me up, because only you can stop this episode. And the way you stop this episode, if you are ready, is to provide us with the last word.
Fashion.